My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. This week I've got a returning guest in Brian Rigsby from RetroGameBooks.com, one of the best friends of the show. Love having him on, love chatting with him, always a good time. So we answer a question. This is the first time answering of the question, so it's a new one for all the listeners out there. Presentation. So that visual design of that hardware or that software or console that you love, like what has the best presentation? So not just with the physical hardware of it, but, you know, maybe the case design, the game designs and the UI and, like, you know, all of that. What system had that presentation that stood out to you that you loved? So this is a cool conversation to have. So a little bit different, not like a typical question or a, you know, hot takey response or anything like that at all. Just sharing some stuff and some thoughts about things we love. So enjoy that episode. For the other business stuff up front, I've got Retro Game Zine Issue 3 is digitally available on the Patreon page. So patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop, I think is what it is. You can go there and buy the digital edition of that now. Physical copies will be in the next week or two. I'm finishing shipping out the physical copies to Kickstarter backers before I post that on my web store at pixelsandpolygons.net. There was just a small delay. The sticker company I used to make one of the bonuses screwed up, and they're not replacing them as quickly as I thought. So now it's like delaying my shipping. But yeah, I want to make sure everyone who supported it through Kickstarter gets it first before I put it up there for everyone else to buy. So that will be in the coming weeks. My goal to make sure it's out before the end of the month, so the March issue can still technically be called the March issue. April will come around and I'll have a new issue physically and digitally available for April as well. And then a Kickstarter probably soon, unfortunately, but it's just because my planning and my foresightedness of this, I probably could have saved myself some headaches, but that'll be coming soon. And I'll do, instead of two issues, I'm going to do three issues that you can pick your choice of, or get all three together. Let you pick and choose the ones that you want the most, or get all of them together. Like I said, I'm going to do three issues because that will give me enough time to have the campaign, collect the funds, print and produce the rewards, not have any, or have the opportunity that if there are delays, it doesn't impact everyone getting it on time, and then having enough time to have downtime in between before we have to come back and do it all over again. So, this little 2 month cycle for me, even with like the shorter campaign duration, you know, a week of campaign, 10 days of campaign, but then 14 days waiting for payments, and then, you know, 2-3 weeks waiting for printing and shipping, getting that directly to me to then have to ship that out. That's almost the 2 months of the two issues I was doing. So you live and learn, but I'm still able to call this a monthly zine because it has still happened monthly and it's still well, even with this. So thanks to everyone who's been reading and enjoying the Retro Game Zine. That's been a lot of fun to do, as well. But, 32 Bit Library Volume 5's pending in the background, still being worked on. That's like a longer term book project. You know, those don't just happen overnight. So still having fun with that. And, I think that's it. I recorded a podcast, What You Doing podcast, with Matt Calder from Blue Sky. I recorded that today. He has a different release schedule for his, so depending on when you're listening to this, there may be an episode of that show. It was fun to do someone else's podcast. I love guesting on other folks' shows and being able to, you know, chat with more like-minded folks on video games and creative process and things. So you may be able to look for that in the next coming weeks. I'll share it on my Blue Sky account. So that should be it. again, it's a lot of the same stuff each week, but, you know, liking, commenting, sharing, all that stuff, helps get it in front of maybe a potential new audience of people who either might find and discover this show and enjoy it, or might find and discover like the books or zines that I'm working on. So if you yourself have been supporting me and have enjoyed that, it will go a long way to share, like, or, you know, repost, things, and then even, like reviews for the podcast, whatever platform you're listening to this on, drop it. If you enjoy the show, drop in a little 5-star review. That helps. Just gets it in front of other folks who might be able to discover something cool that they might like and enjoy as well. So thanks for any and all the support. Appreciate y'all continuing to have fun doing this. So I will be continuing to do this for the foreseeable future. We will catch you next week with another new episode. But for now, enjoy the conversation with Brian, and we'll catch you next week. Bye. Welcome to another episode of Pixels and Polygons, the conversational podcast about video games. I've started sprinkling in that subtitle there in the last couple of weeks, so I'm going to keep that running. Makes it sound more professional. But I'm joined by a returning guest, longtime buddy of the show, Brian Rigsby. Welcome back, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks again.
Yeah, I've got a still have this cold. I will address that now, a little nasally still. So I know I talk a lot and ramble a lot. I'll maybe try and not do that as much, just so you don't have to hear it as much. But it is what it is. You know, it's going to happen. What's new with you, Brian? I know that by this episode, we're recording it now. Volume 2 of the SNES Maps books is not out yet, but it's coming soon. But is that all what's kind of encompassing your work time right now, is kind of prepping final work on that? Or do you have other things cooking in the background? Like, what's been new with you?
So there's always something going on because, you know, people like you and me are always punishing ourselves whenever there's free time. So yes, that's currently in the pipeline for the printer. So, you know, we'll have an updated ETA on that hopefully soon so we can let everyone know. For anyone that didn't pre-order yet, we'll have some extra copies. So you still can put those orders in. But once those copies are gone, they are gone. We'll move on to volume 3. So yeah, I'm already doing some cleanup work for volume 3. I'm doing some other things in the background, working through some early edits and line edits for some other books that other people are working on, just to be helpful there. But they're working with actual editors, unlike myself. I'm just trying to help in the early days. And I still try to find some time to play games. So I finished Harvest Moon yesterday, Super Nintendo version, the OG. So that was a totally new experience for me, and it was really cool, actually.
I love that game. That was one of those random, like, as I was like a young kid and like discovering emulators and everything, like that was one of those early downloads. And I didn't realize how late in the SNES like life it was released, you know, like it was like, what, 96 or something like that? It's still technically the same year as the Nintendo 64.
Memories of it was like, there were some ads for it in some magazines, and they were kind of vague at first, and hopefully these are not false memories, but I just remember being like very intrigued, very interested, like not knowing what this is. Like, no one's walking around saying it's a farm simulator. Like, that wasn't a conversation yet, really. So it just seemed interesting, but then it just kind of disappeared. Like you said, like, we moved on to other things, or at least I moved on to other things. So I just missed the boat. And so this is just one of those things on the backlog you got to circle back to.
Yeah, I always like that visual style too. It always reminded me of like, hey, this is like an RPG just without combat or something. Like, this, that's kind of like what like my mindset was as a kid. So yeah, the carrot on a stick formula that is just super addicting. And that series gets better before it gets worse. So there's some really good ones still even ahead after that one if you continue playing.
Everyone's now telling me to play Stardew Valley, yes. But I'm scared about the time that will require.
Yeah, Stardew is like the ultimate best of like all the best mechanics, but with like really good sense of pacing and like charm and polish and everything. Like that's a super rad one for sure. Mm-hmm. I've lost a lot of time on that one. And then when the Vita version came out, I was like, oh no, I'm not like free when I leave my home. Like, I can bring it with me, and like this is not healthy. This is not safe. But cool. Looking forward to the Maps books, the new one, the
Volume 1, though, obviously, you know, people can still buy that, right? It's not like it was that crazy and popular, and it's not sold out or anything by any means whatsoever.
I appreciate the leading question. Yes, it is sold out. And people keep asking, but, you know, right now we'll wrap up the 3 volumes and then we'll circle back and see what we can do because a lot of people are interested. So I don't see why we wouldn't do another run.
Yeah, that means you got to get that Volume 2 now. So make sure you keep an eye on, even though the pre-orders close, yes, you know, you'll have to refresh that page on launch day or whatever it may be and try and snag some copies or something.
Yeah. Well, no, you still can right now, but once those are gone, they're gone. So there's still a few left to secure, but gotcha. Yes, I agree with you. Grab them now if you can.
My pre-order is already in, so, I ain't stressing over here.
Cool.
So, cool. Well, let's dive in. Let's have some fun. We'll jump into a couple this or that's that I've been doing now, and then the icebreaker, and then we'll ask the main question of the day. But we'll get warmed up with some this or that's. Let's see. Guns or knives?
I hope we're still talking about games. I mean, when you say that, like the first thing I think about, of course, is like the old like Counter-Strike days where it was like obviously primarily a gun game, but like that moment where there'd be you and one other person left and you would both kind of mutually take out the knife and just through your body language come to some form of etiquette-based agreement that you would not cheat and switch back and you would have that little dance, you know, you would do the circle and see what happens. So that's the first thing I think about. I mean, I'll go with knife.
And would you walk, like you could run faster if you had the knife out than a gun out in that game? Is that true? Or is that just like I used to remember seeing people playing that and like they'd pull out their knife to like run the early like sprint to like where the combat was. Maybe that was just them being cool and visual flair.
I don't remember if like maybe in the early days that had an effect. My memory is that it didn't, but it's been so long. Everyone would do that because it was like the fun thing to do, but I don't remember it mattering. Oh man, someone's gonna have to correct me though.
Yeah, I mean, it could just be that people did it. That was just like a sign of skill. Like, hey, look, I've been playing so long. Like, you know, I've got my knife out, and you know, but obviously, as soon as they got to the battle, they pulled their gun out. All right. Let's see. Run and gun or beat 'em up?
Oh, definitely beat 'em up. I'm actually not. Wow, that's a hard one. Yeah, I'm still gonna go with beat 'em up. I mean, I was looking at Final Fight Guy last night, something I've already looked at before, but it was just, you know, emulating and just like taking a quick look at. But yeah, I think I'm a little more into that zone. I'm guessing you are too.
I love me some Final Fight. Maybe love it too much. Legally barred from doing certain things with it at this point. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
At the advice of counsel, I will. Yeah.
Do you want the day one edition or the director's cut game of the year edition?
So I will go with the latter. I'm someone who I'm usually very comfortable waiting for something, especially, I mean, this is for all kinds of different, you know, mediums, because there's so much going on that I can just look at something else. Sometimes it's like you want to be part of the zeitgeist and be part of the conversation when things are happening. So there are a few exceptions to that rule where you just can't miss out. But for the most part, I think of it like, oh yeah, like we're just about to go from PS4 to 5, there'll probably be an enhanced version, director's cut, whatever. I got other things going on. I'll just wait for that. It'll probably be the better game in the end, perhaps. So usually I go with that. I also like early adopting, especially with like consoles in particular. I'll hold out if I can also, because, you know, maybe you'll get slightly better hardware, even if it's not a pro, you know, just because they want to work through the different kinks and stuff in the early days.
Yeah, or you just buy the multiple revisions just because you're some sucker like me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of sickos, and that includes me, but yeah, try not to.
Let's see, last one, we'll do limited health in ammo or unlimited health in ammo?
Definitely limited, unless the exception being like it's something like I'm so over this game, I just want to turn on God mode and just like finish kind of a thing. Because, I mean, games are games because there's rules and challenges. And if you're, you know, like sure, maybe like if you have unlimited health, like, you know, you're solving some puzzles or whatever, platforming still, but so much of the challenge is gone that like the risk reward system is eliminated. And to me, it just ultimately stops being fun at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's like that, there's that moment where like the Gears of War era where it was like the screen would just kind of get like red around it. And they're like, oh, that's, I guess I'm low on health. And if you just kind of sat behind a wall for a minute, it would just fade away and your health would come back and you'd kind of just get back into it. So it was like, hey, we're going to let you be hit a few times, but if you get hit too much, you'll die. But we'll let you kind of reset your mistake counter basically and keep on tracking. But yeah, I mean, game by game, it all kind of depends. And I guess if you're really trying to push that pace and, you know, have those big buff army men kind of run through and blow stuff up, you know, it's not a bad idea to just refill the health and not have you manage all that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it. That's the this and or that. So we'll have this icebreaker question. This is a fun one too. I like this question a lot. I made it up, so I'm pretty good at these, I think. Tell me, Brian, real quick, you know, this isn't a question. This is just throw out the title of one of your favorite games. One of your favorite gaming franchises. Just share the title of it.
Game or series?
Series.
Zelda.
Okay, Legend of Zelda. Okay, now give it a new title. If you can't use The Legend of Zelda, what would you call
that?
Well,
that's
that
pretty
series?
Easy. You know, I mean, if we started over, it'd probably be called The Adventures of Link, right? Or Adventures in Hyrule, if we want to, you know, go with more of a Star Wars instead of calling it Luke Skywalker Space Journey kind of situation to keep things open.
Yeah, okay. That's a good one. Yeah, you actually were able to pull from some things they've already tried to use.
I think I just got lucky that I picked something that was very easy, right?
No, that's good. That's a good one. I'm looking forward to stumping some people with this one. That's a one I'm going to keep on the drawing board. All right. Well, let's. We had a main question we wanted to answer and talk about. And this is another. This is going to be the first time we've been able to answer this on the show. So this will hopefully be a fun conversation. But this is all around the presentation of a console, of an era, of a generation, or whatever you may call it. But I just kind of want to know, what's your favorite console look? So whether that's its design, you know, the package, the aesthetics of it all, you know, like what is your favorite look that you've come across? And then let's talk about everything about it. You know, like it's the controller design, the cases, the game styles, the, you know, all the branding that it used. But yeah, I'd be curious to know, what is your favorite console look?
Right. And so I did not tell you this before, so it's nice that I get to surprise you. So I'll do a secondary and a primary, if that's okay. I'll just be really quick on the secondary just to kind of get out of the way, because they're both in like two different categories for me. The secondary I'll go with first is the Sega Mark III. So let me just describe it real quick, since this is an audio medium. It's a rectangular prism. It's very sleek. It's very 80s, which I love. The color scheme is, you know, a bit of a kind of an off-white primary color, accented by blacks, and then just like a hint of yellow and blue. So the blue is the Sega logo on the controller and the console, and then the yellow is the pause button that's on the console itself. I should, as a disclaimer, mention, like, I've never actually even played this thing before. I think I've seen it in person once at a convention or something, but it's just the total look of it, the 80s aesthetic, the color scheme, just like the little hints of color instead of like kind of like it's not overdone. It's similar to like the, you know, the North American NES, where you just have those little hints of red. But there's something about this yellow, blue, white, black color scheme that I think really works. And the yellow and blue are very, you know, kind of bright and work well off each other. It's just sleek. And it almost looks like something you'd pull out of like a server rack or something. It's got like the little vent holes on top, and it's just like, it's got that little, it almost like where the controllers go on the side, like they kind of look like wings almost. Like it's just beautiful. And like, I also love that, you know, we used to call things joysticks more so back in the day, right? And it just says, just the way it says joy, like like shorthand where the controller slots are, I think is like kind of cute. It says joypad on the actual controllers themselves. You know, the D-pad doesn't look like the greatest thing. D-pads have, you know, come a long way. But it's really about the aesthetics and the look. Okay. So I wanted to get that one out of the way before I got to the real one. Have you seen this one?
Well, I'm looking at it, same thing, same as you. I've not actually ever seen one in person. I didn't know anybody who actually owned one or anything. It is just one I've seen from retroactively looking back and everything. I do think this D-pad also had a unique thing where you could like screw in like a little like into the middle of the thumb pad. I thought it had like a thing where you can make it like a joystick, essentially, you know, for certain games.
I mean, it looks like it. I'm sure someone listening to this is screaming because they owned it, but yeah. it looks like it in the imagery. It's one of those things where like I'd love to kind of own it and put it on the shelf kind of thing, maybe one day, just because I just think it like it just pulls me back into the 80s in such a great way.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it had the storage for the controllers on the side. I'm seeing that here. I pulled up a picture myself. That's cool. It has like that, it's, you know, Famicom style. I mean, I know those were attached to the system, but still this had like the little cool storage for it. Yeah, but this is just one of those rad piece of 80s technology. Like it definitely does not say, you know, video game system at all necessarily. I mean, I guess maybe you grew up with it or whatever and you recognize that, but it is just a neat little, a neat visual style to it for sure. I like that a lot.
Yeah. It's got a cool little card slot there too. People should definitely look it up if they haven't seen it. But my main answer, because I cheated, is the Turbo Express. So like the, you know, AKA the, PC Engine GT. So my brother owned one of these. My dad would travel quite a lot, and he actually, when he was in, I think it was in Japan, he brought one of these home. And, you know, at the time, this being around 1990, you know, when you see a handheld, yeah, they're kind of boxy like this, but, you know, this was during a time where you would not easily see some big bright screen. And the look of this thing, let me go back a second. Like it's a big black, it's kind of like a rectangular prism, but it's very curved. It has a lot of contoured edges, which is also fairly novel for the time for a handheld. It even has these like beveled contours that kind of dip into where the buttons are inlaid. It has built-in turbo controls, which is awesome and actually quite useful. We only had two games, but we got lucky, I think, because we had Bonk 2, I think. There was like three Bonk games. I think we had two. And then we had Ninja Spirit, which I think is like just an incredible game. I know we're not talking about the games, but like they obviously is like what attracted us to the system. But yeah, it has like this little green slider button on the top, again, like using an accent color to just kind of draw your attention to the power, you know, the power toggle, because that's like what's important. It was, of course, an incredible battery hog. Like we were just hunting for batteries all the time. It also has an add-on for it, which I didn't learn about until much later, which is the TurboVision TV tuner. So it's a little peripheral that hooks onto the side and has an actual antenna, so you can use it as a TV tuner, which is hilarious and obviously incredibly obsolete technology for this day and age, but for the time, quite cool, and also just makes it look, you know, anytime there's a console, you know, like where you're, you know, like when you're taking a Genesis and stacking like 10 things on top of it, making it ridiculous. Like I'm all for that. I mean, I almost wanted to talk about that today, but I didn't. But this thing is great. Like despite being so chunky and blocky, it feels actually quite good in your hand. It's a little heavy, so that's a little tough. But the screen looks like it still looks good. My brother still owns his. He actually just got the screen repaired because, you know, things get old and wear and tear happens. And the screen, I still think, looks quite great. And so, yeah, this thing is a really cool looking thing. It's got a little hand strap thing you can hook on there too, you know, for on the go. But it's one of those very confident designs because it's basically just black with like a tiny bit of like light gray built into it and that little green switch on the top. So I appreciate like the confidence it has in its form factor. And then one last thing is like, around the screen, there's like a little bit of like a kind of like a lid that goes around the edges, just a little bit of a lip. You know, I don't know if that's more for the look or is it like, you know, it's lit up. So you don't need like necessarily like the glare protector, but maybe it's for a little bit of that. But it looks cool nonetheless.
Yeah, that is cool. I've seen one of these as well, like random garage sale, like purchase and all that stuff. I think my dad may have bought one. And as soon as it was like, I realized like, oh, this plays video games and everything, I think the thing disappeared. I think he must have sold it himself and everything, but it was like it changed hands and was in our home for just a little while and then gone again. But physically, I do remember playing this. And same thing too, my best friends growing up, they their older brothers had an Atari Lynx. And I remember for like, you know, a couple weekends, we'd pull that thing out and play through like some games on there. And then suddenly that thing disappeared as well. And I have no idea where it went to and all that stuff. But yeah, portable gaming, like as a kid, like it blew my mind to be able to like take, you know, games on the go. Like, yes, like being, I'm well aware of the Game Boy, like, you know, everybody had a Game Boy and everything, but that was a certain type of game. You weren't taking like the console games on the go. You were taking games that played similar to it, but you know, the monochrome look and the screen resolution, all stuff. It wasn't, you know, the exact same experience. Still had plenty of fun with it, but this just outright played those same games, you know, you can just kind of take and be on the go with and everything, which is like super rad. Another one that I always wanted to get was one of those Sega Nomads, when that, you know, towards the end of the Genesis life, where you could literally just pop in a Genesis cartridge and play it out and about on the go and everything. But I assume just like this, those were likely a large battery hog as well too. Stealing from remotes, stealing from everything around the house, you know, as soon as you can find any batteries. Yeah.
The poor remote controls back then were always second class citizens. And yeah, you touched on such a great point. The cue cards are like what made this thing so incredible. The grab and go element, the whole like, I can play this on my TurboGrafx, you know, or I could play it on the go kind of thing is like, it's pretty incredible if you think about that, for them doing something like that so long ago. I mean, the Switch, you can put it in dock mode or take it on the go, and we all like celebrated how incredible that was, and we should, because it's like we've never done something like that where you're like literally putting the system into a thing and then it's like immediately playing on your TV. But like, it's the same concept, just instead of the console, you know, switching places, you have a console, you have a portable, you have the two systems, and you're switching the cards, and it was awesome. It's such a cool thing. We didn't have a TurboGrafx-16, but like I was very aware of like how novel that approach was, and it's great.
Yeah, that TV tuner accessory as well too. I'm looking up a picture of that. It adds a little like chunk onto the side and everything, and yeah, I feel that I remember there was a lot of electronics. I'm going to have to look it up, but I think there may have been one of these for the Game Gear. I'm not sure, but I
could believe it.
Yeah. And you just had to like wheel through the dial to try and pick up the channel and like the local broadcast and all that stuff, you know, from wherever it's at. And, the idea of like being able to walk around with a portable TV as well. It's kind of rad. I mean, I would have loved that again, you know, as a child, but you know, at the cost of the battery life, you know, you're not necessarily out there for hours and hours.
Six AA batteries. Like that's a lot. A
lot of juice. A lot of juice.
Yeah. It claims 3 hours for 6 AA batteries on the Wikipedia page. My memory is it was less, but maybe just the time was flying by.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not that much time before you have to re-up all of those batteries again. And they sell them in packs of 8, of course. So you couldn't just, you know, 4 or 8. You were, you know, buying extras. You had two other ones lying around. You tried to save them. That was the drama. That's cool. Well, since this is the first time we're answering the question, I kind of want to share mine as well. And it's kind of simple. I mean, I'm sure that a lot of people would agree with it, but I'll get a little niche with it and go the European Dreamcast. From the US, I like the orange Dreamcast logo. You know, for whatever reason, it was blue in the European countries and everything. Not sure why that is, but I picked the European one specifically because their game cases, they were not just like a standard like jewel case that you can go buy a replacement one from like Office Depot right now. They had like their own like plastic like clamshell style design to it and everything, with a little window box for like the cover art. But you know, you still had a space for like the instruction manual and everything. It was almost like every game was almost as thick as like a double disc PS1 game, you know, and they're all kind of thick. And then they had a really cool design aesthetic where, like, you know, the spine of the game was all like the same font and the same style and everything. It wasn't like cluttered with, like, you know, actual like official logos and things like that. So when you see like a large run or a large collection of somebody's, like, you know, PAL Dreamcast collection, it just looks really neat and pleasing on the shelf from just the game standpoint. But like the console itself, I loved like just a simple white square design, but like when you get into it, like if you like the back lip of it is almost kind of like fins and raises up just slightly, and then the front edge where like the power button and open button are, it almost it does the opposite. It almost kind of like falls and like flows down. And you know, almost if you kind of paired it up against each other, it would fit fully, but it's not like a perfect square or a perfect flat surface or anything. It's got just like a nice, like gradual kind of like curve to it there. And just, it always felt like the weight of it, like for like looking at it, you think of this light piece of plastic and like, you know, super, you know, just kind of flimsy and everything, but you pick it up and you can tell like they like measured out and designed all of the internals like super appropriately, because it's all condensed in there as best as they can be. I mean, you had like the modem and everything on there that you could detach and, you know, replace, but I don't know why you would. There wasn't any improvement or anything there to it, but and maybe they had ideas for that. But I've always just loved the visual look of that. The controller, while yes, maybe it needed a second analog stick, still it was like a weird evolution of what they were kind of playing around with already on the Saturn and everything with their 3D pad and everything. I really like that. It matches the same aesthetic of the console itself. It has like the little VMU window, like you had. It was really like future looking, you know, with the way that it was kind of presenting itself. And then the simple elegance of it all, the clean look of it all, like that even matched like the startup. Like when you booted up the system, you know, it would just be that little Dreamcast, you know, ambient swirl sound, and then it would jump you right into a game. There wasn't any like long, like pomp and circumstance, crazy, like loud, obnoxious startup or anything. It kind of like just simply kind of got you all into things, which I just loved about it. It was simple. It was like Sega knew it needed to be simple. They had a couple of blunders, you know, going from the Genesis not being, you know, as popular in Japan maybe as it was in America, and America really wanted to push the Genesis and not go with the Saturn, and then Sega of Japan leaning heavily into the Saturn, then US not wanting to push that as much and kind of bumbling at launch. Like worldwide, they needed to kind of unify and simplify some things, and I think this did that really well. Like, and it didn't overdo it, and even reading about how they tried to downplay the Sega branding on it, like I never even realized that as a kid. Or as a young adult at this point, but the Sega logo isn't like plastered all over like the box and packaging and things like that. They like, you know, we're like, hey, you know what? Maybe the Sega branding, is it damaged? Is it not? At this point, let's just make sure this is a standalone, like very clean. We'll kind of present the Dreamcast branding as like the driving factor behind all of this. I just love its design. It just visually looks cool and always kind of stood out. And I just love those cases specifically. So I'd love to have a nice PAL set of Dreamcast games on my shelf one day. But it's not today, but maybe one day, you know. Were you a Dreamcast fan at all, Brian?
I didn't. I've only known one person that's owned a Dreamcast in my life, and so barely played any games. And it's one of those things where one day, hopefully, I can kind of go through some of the library. I've always loved the way it looked, and I remember when I was first shown it, I remember thinking like, wait, what's up with the controller? What's this little viewport thing in the middle? Yeah. Like, that's so cool, right? And you're right about, you know, Sega has like one of the greatest logos of all time. And like, it makes you wonder, yeah, like how much are they kind of trying to keep it subtle or not? But
yeah,
it's lasted, and it has that form that I think just still looks amazing today. One thing I just noticed looking it up, it's neither really here nor there, but it's just kind of an interesting curiosity is, you know, it's primarily just, you know, it's a lot of circles, a lot of curvature, but then you have like that one triangle. It's almost like an arrow. And it's like where the light would illuminate. But it's pointing towards the controller, and then the triangle controller is pointing back at the system. It's just kind of, you know, it's an oddity. But I'm sure some designer somewhere did that very purposely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. It's a really good look. I have this Dreamcast book on my shelf I'm looking at, so I can just see the system there. I have one out in my living room as well. I always loved it. And I mean, even the games, like the reasons I love like that original PlayStation, because like the odd games that were released, the games they took unique chances on and everything, like the Dreamcast, like Sega did the same thing. I mean, you had games like Seaman, Jet Grind Radio, Typing of the Dead. You had like so many like unique, Shenmue. You had like, they were like, hey, like we're just going to make a fun game regardless of genre, regardless of style. Like we're going to just have some fun with this and like throw it all out there. And, you know, unfortunately, it may have been too little, too late for them, of course. Obviously, they had to exit the hardware business and went, you know, just software only. But they went out, like, on a high note. And as somebody who didn't really have any loyalty, you know, at that point, I went from an NES to a Genesis to a Nintendo 64 that I sold within the year for a PlayStation, and then got that Dreamcast as well. Like I had dabbled in a little bit of everybody there. So, I loved being able to be with Sega there again, coming back from the Genesis to there. Even though I skipped the Saturn, coming back there and seeing that like end that on a high note. And that let me like, you know, solidify basically sticky with that PlayStation brand and kind of riding that into the sunset to this day. But
yeah. I almost talked about the PS1 on this one. That was kind of my like third choice. I didn't talk about the little cutesy PS1.
Oh yeah, I love that. And then that little screen they made for it and everything that you can get, you know, if you want to go crazy. Like,
it's so cool that they did that. I don't have the little screen. I just have it connected to my little CRT. But like, I kind of feel like I want it, even though I don't think I'll ever use it.
A couple years ago, I had I stumbled across a factory sealed one. You know, somebody was selling for like $20, and I was like, oh, cool. And then I already had one that was kind of had like a loose connection on mine. So I was like, hey, I'll get rid of this one and I'll just use this factory sealed one. Then I was like, wait, I better not open it. I'll just keep it there. And then something happened and I was just like, oh, I'm not using this thing. I'll just sell this. So I got rid of the one that was still functioning, but it didn't really, you know, it was kind of a loose connection. And then I got rid of that factory sealed one because I was like, I'm never going to fully appreciate having this factory sealed one. And now I just don't have a screen for mine anymore at all. And like looking it up, like pricing on them is like way out of the park. I'm like, I had two. And just a few years ago when the prices like weren't that bad, like I got rid of them like an idiot, and now I have none. So one day I'll buy another one, and I don't want one of those third party ones, you know, like Performance or Interact or like one of those companies made like a third party one, but it doesn't have that same matching white look. You can just tell it's like, you know, a third party. Mm-hmm. Oh, give me that official stuff or nothing.
Yeah, no one wants the Mad Cats.
Yeah. Ugh. Sorry, Mad Cats. You know.
No, sorry, not sorry.
But cool. Well, we did it. That was the presentation discussion. So, the visual designs of these things, the shapes and format and factors of all these. It's really interesting kind of to talk about those things. So thank you for sharing yours, Brian. We'll definitely have to get you on another episode here in the near future. Always welcome and look forward to chatting with you more. Anything you want to plug before we wrap and go for this week?
Go to retrogamebooks.com and get the latest book before it's gone. Join the mailing list if you want to know about restocks and anything that's new. We send a few of those out a year. And that's about it. Oh, yeah. Or go to Blue Sky at Retro Game Books if you want to chit-chat. I like the chit-chat.
Yeah. I'll put all that information in the show notes below. But right on. Thank you, Brian, for joining us. We will catch you again in the future. Have a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do it again. Thank you.